This is Dr. Shannon M. Clark with A Doctor Delivers Podcast, and today I am discussing melanoma and other skin cancers with dermatologist Dr. Jennifer Deaver. Have a listen. Dr. Peterson, I actually met her. Was it the first time? About 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Right after I got married.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I had known about her through another colleague, and as we'll just start off with a little personal story of mine. I got married in May of 2013. We went to Costa Rica, one of Dr. Peterson's favorite places to go for our honeymoon. And I got sunburned on a catamaran, which happens. As I got older, I considered myself pretty protected, but the sunscreen we had was not very good. And I got sunburned. And within about 3 months or so, I noticed a spot on my thigh. Just looked weird. Like it was a mole before that I knew that I had. And then it got like a little star in it. And I was like, okay, then I know this doesn't look right. So I scheduled an appointment to see Dr. Peterson for a mole check on December 23rd of 2013. And I remember that day clearly because it was a beautiful Houston day. Decembers in Houston are not like what they are in a lot of areas of the country. And my husband and I were out for this bike ride. It was so pretty. The weather was perfect. And the appointment was like 30 minutes away. And I said, I think I'm going to cancel my appointment. Let's just keep riding the bike. My husband was like, no, you're going to go. So I went. And of course, Dr. Peterson saw that spot. And she was like, that's got to come off. And it came off. And about right after Christmas is when you called me. It was between Christmas and New Year's. And it was melanoma. I had what's called melanoma in situ. We'll talk a little bit about what the different types of melanoma are a little bit later. And it 0.7 centimeter or 7 millimeter spot. Ended up with a 7 centimeter chunk of tissue out of my leg. I healed very well. We got all the borders. I didn't need any other surgery or anything else, any other treatment, and it was gone other than surveillance for mole checks. So that's how Dr. Peterson and I got to be very well acquainted with each other. So I thank you again for that.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so this is her thing, and so that's why I chose her to discuss this topic. So while it's here, what is melanoma, Dr. Peterson?
Yeah, so melanoma is a form of skin cancer. Now, it's not the most common type of skin cancer, but we do see about 200,000 cases every year in the United States. And melanoma comes from the type of cells called melanocytes. And the melanocytes are the type of cell that produces pigment in our skin. And what happens is over time, and mostly related to UV damage from the sun or from tanning beds, we see that changes and mutations can happen within these melanocytes, and melanoma can develop. Now, only about 20% of melanomas come from a mole. So while it's important to be always watching our moles, it's also important to be watching for new spots that come up, because new spots are about 70 to 80% of the cases of melanomas.
So, for me, my risk factors are very obvious. As a young child, my mom she loved the sun. And I remember vividly getting multiple sunburns as a child that went into my teen and early 20 years when I was the same way. I wasn't really a beach person, but, I loved to get some sun. And then I did several years of tanning bed. I wasn't too bad with the tanning bed, but I did go. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that I racked up. Would you say that my melanoma was probably due to whatever happened in my earlier years and all the sun damage that I had?
Yeah, it's really just a cumulative effect. We know if you have more than 5 sunburns throughout your life, then that's actually doubling your risk for melanoma. The tanning beds, double, triple, and really go up to about 75% increased risk of melanoma. And then other risk factors would be if you had a severe blistering sunburn in adolescence or as a child, that also doubles the risk of melanoma. So again, it was just all these cumulative changes and cumulative effects of the UV radiation.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate because, we do love the sun. But, this leads to another question. I hear this very commonly that people of color, whether it be, lighter skin tones or darker skin tones, that they are less susceptible to getting melanoma. Is that true?
So we actually see skin cancer in all skin tones. Now we do see that skin cancer rates are highest in patients with fair skin, light eyes, paler hair tones, like blonde and redheads. However, we see melanoma in all skin colors. And typically the there's more of a delay in the diagnosis in patients with darker skin. And the risks of dying are higher in those darker skin tones as well. And again, it's usually because of the delay of diagnosis, because a lot of times people don't think that it's something that can happen to them.
Right, right. Yeah, and that makes sense, because maybe they, it's not noticed as quickly as in someone who has a lighter skin tone like myself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I want to make it, bring up that point, because I hear that very commonly. That, oh, I can't get it because I'm darker skin tone. And that's simply not true. We still have to protect ourselves and from sun damage.
Exactly.
So the next question would be, what are the different types of melanoma? And you could talk about my type as well while you're there. So, yeah.
Absolutely. So there's mainly four subtypes of melanoma, plus the one that Dr. Clark had that we'll talk about. There's a few other very obscure types too that we're just going to not worry about right now. The most common type of skin cancer is superficial spreading melanoma. Now, this is going to be the one that we see that has more of what we call a horizontal growth phase. So it grows outward or it grows downward. And that's important, because when things start to grow down into the deeper areas of the skin, that's when we have to worry about metastases. Then there's another type called nodular melanoma. Now, this is the one that has what we call a vertical growth phase. So it grows down fast.
Yeah.
Another type is called acral-lentiginous. This is going to be the most common type that we see in patients of skin of color. And that can happen on the hands, the toes, and even the nails. So many people don't know, but Bob Marley died of a melanoma on his great toe.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's going to be the most common subtype. There's one more kind, and that's called lentigo-maligna melanoma. That's going to be a melanoma that's generally very slower growing over a year, maybe a year and a half. And it typically happens on sun-exposed areas that have areas of really intense sun exposure. So that's going to be mainly the face. Now, the subtype that you had, melanoma in situ, that means that the melanoma cells have only in... are only in the epidermis. So that's going to be the top layer of the skin. Thinking of the skin kind of like a crust of bread, or the little outer bread part that's brown, that's going to be the epidermis.
Okay.
And then underneath where all the white yummy stuff is, that's going to be your dermis. So in a melanoma in situ, they're very thin, but they also have a very high cure rate because they haven't had that chance to drop down deeper and then get out of the dermis.
Right. So that's why for me, it only took removal, and you have to get certain amount of tissue around it to make sure you get all of it. So that's why I ended up with such a big area taken out, and which was fine. And I understood that. But thankfully for mine hadn't invaded. And, you know, I required, what was it, 2 years of routine mole checks. And I just got cleared for every year. So not too long ago. So I think I'm due pretty soon. So I'll be calling you. But yeah, so that was my diagnosis was melanoma in situ. So, you know, we've already touched on this a little bit, but why is, you know, melanoma in particular, why is early detection so important?
Right, because the cure rates are so high, if we find them very thin, like yours was, Dr. Clark, then we're looking at a 99% cure rate. So we want to be able to detect these melanomas while they're small and while they're thin, because that's going to keep our scars smaller, but also, like you said, really working towards trying to keep it from invading into the blood vessels, into the nerves, and increasing that risk of mortality associated with the disease.
Yeah. So basically, the deeper it gets, the more likely it is to invade, as you said, or metastasize. And that just means it gets into the deeper tissues and go to different areas of the body once it gets deep enough. And that how deep, it kind of probably it would depend on each individual, correct?
Right, it does. And so that's one of the most important things. When there's a biopsy done, the pathologist, the doctor who's reading the skin tissue under the microscope, is actually looking to see what is the deepest depth that the melanoma cells get to. And that has a big impact on staging and also treatment.
Okay, yeah. So that's why early detection is so important. So, you know, for people like myself who, see, I was 40 at the time and I had the history, right, obviously, that put me at increased risk. Even if they don't have a diagnosis, when would you recommend that they start getting these mold, what we call mole checks?
Right. I really recommend once patients are at about 18 years of age, at least going ahead and having a skin check once every year, maybe every 1 to 2 years. And so again, it's just early detection is just so important mm-hmm. so we can capture these things, because the rates of melanoma, the rates of all skin cancers are going up. It's part mm-hmm. of it is because of all the sun damage we had, but also it's because of all our detection that we've been mm-hmm. doing. And we're finding the good news is on melanoma, the death rates have actually gone down. And
okay.
because of all of the early detection that's been going on.
So yeah. So, you know, you're not too young. Anybody that's listened to this, 18, Dr. Peterson is recommending. And that just means you go in once a year, once every other year, and they look over all your moles, and they kind of, whatever she sees on me that, you know, has a potential, she'll document. And then every time I go in, she looks at how she documented it before to see if anything's changed. And it's kind of like a roadmap to your body to know what all the different moles and spots look like. So if anything changes, you know, no more than a year will have gone by, and you know, we can catch it early. And since I had melanoma in situ too, I have had several spots taken off, just you know, because they did change. And as soon as I see something, I'm like, just take it off. Yeah. And that's fine, you know. And thankfully everything's been negative since then. But yeah, that's why we go, or why I go every year now, just in case we do catch something something else. Okay. So yes, melanoma is what we're mainly talking about today, but that's not the only skin cancer. What other skin cancers should we know about?
Yeah, the other two most common type of skin cancers are basal cell and squamous cell carcinoma. Basal cell is the most common. There's about 4.5 million cases in the US. That's so many per year. When we looked at these rates about 7 to 8 years ago, it's actually doubled. There was only about 2 million cases wow. per year in basal cells. So the incidence was really on the rise. Basal cells, the good news about them, they're very slow growing. It is extremely rare for them to metastasize to different parts of your body. However, they can be a little bit, we call locally destructive, meaning if they get to be too big, especially on the face, it can cause some disfigurement.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they tend to, what do you, are they, do they grow faster? Is that what you're saying? And they can get into a bigger area. I know a girlfriend of mine had mm-hmm. one about right here, and it just looked like it was a pimple
exactly.
that wouldn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was there for a while. And then finally she's like, you know, I'm going to go check it out. And it ended up being a basal cell. Yes. Luckily they were able to do it, cut it out to where it was on. What is this, a smile line? Is
yes.
that what that's considered, a smile line? Mm-hmm. But she ended up with a scar about like this. And I've seen, and I'm sure everybody has seen on the internet, some cases where people talk about, and even young women, mm-hmm. where they had one and ended up with a pretty big defect on their face. So any of those little bumps that you see that don't necessarily look like moles, but they're raised or that, are those things to be aware of as well?
Yeah. So with the basal cells, like you were saying, typically they have like a pink and oftentimes a very shiny surface to them. Sometimes there'll be a little blood vessel running through them, and mm-hmm. Other variants will be a rolled border, where it's kind of a shiny rolled border. So that's typically what a basal cell will look like. And the big thing I tell patients is if there's an acne bump or a bug bite, they're what you think is an acne bump or bug bite, and it doesn't resolve in a month, then we need to see it so that we
can
see it and detect it very early. And then squamous cell carcinomas, there's about 1 million of those cases a year in the United States. And squamous cell carcinoma and basal cell, most commonly, they show up in areas of chronic sun exposure. So that's going to be, you know, face, ears, men who have some hair loss, scalp, hands, arms. And then on the squamous cells, we can sometimes even see them develop in a chronic wound or a chronic ulcer. And then another area that we'll see them sometimes will be if somebody had a third degree burn, especially as a child. And that can be a chemical burn, it can be a thermal burn, but a very severe burn as a child, sometimes we'll see 30 or 40 years later that a squamous cell develop in that burn site.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't realize that. So if there's any history of having some kind of significant burn, that's mm-hmm. also something to watch out for. And make sure you see your dermatologist regularly, even if it's on a small area of your body.
Exactly.
Okay. So the next one is one of my favorite things because I love this diagram. But mm-hmm. so I'm still learning how to do this StreamYard, and one day I will be able to do the green screen, but I'm not there yet. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put this up here, and we're going to talk about the signs of melanoma.
Yeah.
And so, then let me go. Hold on. Let me figure it out.
That looks pretty good.
Ooh,
So the ABCDEs of melanoma. So these are things to be watching for, whether it's a new spot that comes up or one of the moles that you've already had. So A stands for asymmetry. You want a mole or a pigmented spot on your skin to look the same all the way around, so it doesn't look different left to right or top to bottom. In the diagram that we can see that half of this lesion is more of a medium brown, while the other half is a very dark brown, so that's more of a worrisome sign. Next, B is for border. We want nice, smooth, round, crisp borders. Typically, most pigmented lesions should be oval or circle in shape. One thing we can see is most people would think about would be that the borders are expanding or more feathered, but also a receding border is something that is of concern as well. A receding border, it would look like almost like Pac-Man took a little bite out of your mole. And that's because it means that your immune system is detecting something is a little irregular here. And so the immune system's starting to go after it. C is going to be for color. Generally, we want the color in your mole to be very nice and uniform. Now, we'll have some patients that will have 50 to 100 moles, and they may have some moles that are light tan, some that are dark brown, and some that are medium brown. And that's okay. It's as long as that one individual mole has a same color throughout. Now, other colors that we see, most people just think of browns and blacks. We can see blue grays or reds or whites, and we don't like those colors either. There is a subtype of melanoma. It's very rare, called amelanotic melanoma. And this can happen to any of those types of melanoma, but it's where the melanomas are red. And so these are always very concerning for dermatologists because sometimes there's a higher disease burden with an amelanotic melanoma because people are not thinking it's something that's a pigmented lesion. And so sometimes they get ignored a little bit longer on the patient's standpoint before they'll come in to see us. And then D is for diameter. So generally you want your moles to be less than 6 millimeters. There are a few exceptions to that rule. For example, if you have a mole that you're born with or you acquired very, very young age, that's okay because some of those what we call congenital nevi, meaning from birth, they can be, 10, 12 millimeters, and that's fine. And there are even some very large congenital nevi as well. One's called a giant congenital nevi. And those are generally bigger than about 7.5 inches, so very large moles. Once it gets to be that size, 7.5 inches, then there is an increased risk of melanoma. But some of these other smaller moles that people are born with that are, one inch or smaller, than those don't have an increased risk of melanoma versus a smaller mole that's 3 or 4 millimeters. And then the last one is E for evolving or evolution. So this is going to be any change in your mole, growth, whether it's growing outward, growing upward, becoming darker, and then going through any of these other changes as well. For the other signs of other skin cancers, so we talked about with basophils that they can look like a bug bite or an acne bump that just doesn't resolve, typically red, fully shiny. And squamous cells usually are more scaly, kind of hard, thick. There's a subtype that looks like, we call them volcano tumors. They look like little volcanoes coming up. They come rapidly within a week or two. And that's called a carcinoacanthoma.
Okay. That's, and you can get it's called the ABCDEs of melanoma. You can get that online, and just Googling it and have somebody look. But I also think, one thing that's important is if you have a partner or a significant other that, they look at your back at places that you don't normally see, to see if they see anything that's strange. And I'm constantly looking at Renee's back, like, what is that? Just in case I pick up something. I don't know that he's doing that for me, but yeah, whatever. So I think that's also another important thing to look at. And also in your hairline and that, I always get to go to Dr. Peterson when I'm post-calling yucky. So she gets to do this through my yucky hair, but that's important. We don't even think about that. But I know I had always had my hair up, or you can get it where the sunburns, where your hair part line is. And I have a little girl, same thing, of her hair's in pigtails. You got to put sunscreen on those areas because they can get sunburned there. So those, we'll talk more about that, making sure we get good coverage with sunscreen when you're out and exposed to the sun. But But along with that, we'll talk a little bit, you know, we've talked about risk factors, talked about tanning beds and sun burns as a young child. What are some of the other risk factors for women, for people to get melanoma?
Right. So we talked about all of those. We talked a little bit about paler skin tones, lighter eyes, blondes, redheads. Also, it can be if you have 50 or more moles, you're at an increased risk. If you have a family history of melanoma, that's another risk factor. And then when it comes to melanoma, we're also finding that there are some genes that are shared with some breast cancer genes. And so a few of those genes are also putting patients at risk for having melanoma. So whenever I notice that my patient has a history of breast cancer on their intake form, I always want to make sure and check with them and say, okay, what were your, did you have any genes? What were they? Because it's the BRCA and then to the N2KA. I always forget that one. But that's the other gene that's associated.
Okay, so that's important though. If you were did have breast cancer and were tested in a BRCA something positive, you just let your dermatologist know, or just make an appointment with your dermatologist so they can just do a log of any moles that you might have and just start with their surveillance then.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we alluded to for the basal cells and the squamous cells, most common risk factor is going to be that chronic sun exposure. Mm-hmm. And then the squamous cell, the non-healing wounds, but also patients with who are on immuno medicines to suppress their immune system, such as those who are organ transplant recipients, they are also at an increased risk for squamous cell carcinoma specifically.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. Now that we know so much about it, how do we prevent it? What can we do?
Yeah, so one of the great things is going to be seeing your dermatologist once a year, like we talked about. And then like you were mentioning, Dr. Clark, once a month we're supposed to be doing our breast exams. It's a perfect time to go ahead and do your skin check and really get to know your skin. And as you alluded to, if you've got a partner in the house, get them in there, get them to help you, because it's really hard to be able to see your back, and especially like the buttock area too, and the back of your thighs as well. And melanoma is very common for women to be on the legs and the back, which are areas that we really can't see as much. They've not really discussed why. I do think that probably it's, you know, a lot of times people are laying out, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those are going to be some of the preventative things that you can do, but also it's going to go down to wearing sunscreen every day. So at least an SPF 15, even if it's cloudy, even on the days you go to work, make sure that you get into that routine, because that can drop your chance of getting a melanoma by 50%. So that's extremely important. But there's other benefits for doing this too. You know, it helps to decrease sunspots, premature aging, wrinkles. So there are other benefits of doing your sunscreen as well. And then also just practicing really safe techniques when you're going to be out in the sun. So wearing a hat, wearing wearing glasses, and wearing a nice broad-brimmed hat is really going to be the best thing. And a lot of times I think patients think of like the, you know, the kind of the not so cute hats that are out there, so many fashionable hats these days. So really we don't have an excuse. And many of the hat manufacturers have even, they'll even put on their websites what the SPF protection is. Because you want to get something that's got a really high weave, that's a really strong weave, because that's going to block out more sun and be like an SPF 50. Other things to do is wearing rash guards. I love wearing rash guards. And again, there, most people think of these rash guards as these long sleeve ballooning, they're cute, protective gear, but there's so many cute ones. So like, this is mine and I think it's adorable. So there's really ways to do this. Yeah. An SPF 50 fabric. And when you're going to be outside and you're going to be doing things like swimming in the pool for a long time, or snorkeling, especially snorkeling, when you know that you're not going to be able to get out and put sunscreen on your back, that's a perfect opportunity to use rash guards. And they're wonderful for children, because many toddlers, as you well know, they don't want to have sunscreen placed on them and you're trying to wrangle everybody. So it's wonderful to have an SPF 50 long sleeve on your kid, so you know that the trunk is protected and you really need to worry about the other exposure.
Yeah, my twins have them. Yeah. Have multiple of them actually. So they're used to it now. I mean, they're used to being covered for the most part. So they no longer put up a fight. So they're just used to it.
And then
go ahead.
Also making sure to seek shade. Simple things, you know, getting under a large umbrella, but also be cognizant that when you're going to be near the water, not only are you having sun rays coming from below, you're having all these rays that are reflecting off.
Bouncing off,
And so you're getting kind of double whammy. Mm-hmm. So just because you're under an umbrella doesn't mean that you don't get to
be sick. Yeah. You know, I as a physician, the residents always ask me, you know, hey, since I'm getting older now, I'm so wise, you know, what advice do you have, you know, as they're graduating? And honestly, the advice I have, two big pieces of advice I have nothing to do with medicine. I tell them, protect your skin.
Yes.
And take care of your finances.
Yes.
Get a financial advisor early. And I truly believe that those are the two things. We won't go to the financial part, but protecting your skin is so, so important, because not only for skin cancer, but as you get older, you get the sunspots, you get, you know, and I have one actually over here somewhere, and I have one, and it drives me nuts. And then I have it on my, what's this part area called? The décolleté.
Yes.
Décolleté. And you know, it's just, you hit 40 and then all of a sudden you have all these things on your skin. They're like, where did that come from? Well, it came because of what I did when I was in my 20s and 30s. Right. So, you know, I always tell the residents, protect your skin and then protect your finances.
Yeah.
My two biggest pieces of advice had nothing to do with our job, actually.
So they're wonderful. When you're wearing your daily sunscreen, it's also important, as women, we wear a lot of shirts and tops or scrubs that allow to show. So you want to make sure to do your sunscreen also on your neck and chest, because you'll also be really frustrated when at age 40, when you notice that it's a certain grade and then your neck and chest aren't matching. And then the back of the hands. I mean, think about all the time that we spend in our cars driving, our hands are right where the
in the sun. And I do. They're not so bad. After I got diagnosed with melanoma, I avoid the sun, and probably too much. I probably could loosen up a little bit, but it's scary for me. But now that I have little kids, I'm going to have to figure out a way, because they, like, we're at a beach place right now and they want me in the pool. And I'm just like, I don't want to go in the pool, but you know, I'm going to have to, they're getting older and I'm going to, you know, but the rash guard is a great compromise, and I'll just wear the hat way down here and I'll be hunkered down. I'll figure it out. But you know, it's, once you get it, it's scary. And even the minor case that I had, it was very scary, and it changed my life, because I am so, especially not with me, but with my kids, I'm like sunscreen. And because I don't want them to, I have more knowledge than my parents did when I was
a
child. And back then, 40 years ago, they didn't really know what we know now. And it was commonplace that their kids get sunburns. I remember literally laying out because I was so sunburned, I could not move. Yes. And that happened multiple times growing up. And, you know, we have to make sure that, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on, we got to protect not only ourselves, but our kids.
Yes.
But we also talked about, you already mentioned about tanning beds and prior sunburns, but can you just explain what specifically it is about it that is so damaging?
Right. So when we look at UV radiation that comes from the sun, that's a combination of UVB, and that's usually what causes the burn originally when you do have a sunburn. And then there's also UVA, and UVA is known for going much deeper into the skin. Also, it's the one that's more responsible for causing premature aging. When we look at a tanning bed, it's delivering more UVA than even the combination of UVA or UVB that we get from the sun. So it's a very high concentrated form of UVA radiation. Again, it can go very deep. And again, just that chronic damage of that intense UV radiation can lead to mutations.
Yeah. So the tanning beds, you know, it's great because you can get in and get in 20 minutes, which you would do in 2 hours, but there's a reason why it works in 20 minutes instead of 2 hours. So you have to be aware of that. So for all the moms that are listening, you know, your young children, boys and girls, boys do it too. They, and actually boys are probably a little more, and maybe I'm being characterizing them, but a little bit more reckless as far as getting out in the sun. And, you know, girls, our young girls are starting to worry a little bit more about, they're listening about the wrinkles and that, and boys not so much. So we have to make sure we educate our boys too. about taking care of their skin. It's just as important as it is for our young girls.
Exactly. So, you know, when my patients say that they want a pretty healthy glow, we just recommend do sunless tanner, whether you're doing the spray on, especially there's a couple of different options. You could do more of like a lotion, or you could do an airbrushed. And then there's the boost. I really don't like the boost as much because you are inhaling so much more.
What did you say? What's it called?
The boost that people go into.
Oh, the boost. Okay, and, the boost. Yeah. Yeah.
It's better to have somebody airbrush it onto you because you're not going to be inhaling quite as much.
So the boost are where you go in and it just splashed you from side. Is that what you mean? Yeah. Okay. I've had spray tan, but it was where they did it. Someone's used the gun rather than going into a booth. So yeah.
So it's definitely a better option for your lungs.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even think about that, but yeah, that definitely makes sense. Let's not, it's take care of our skin and our lungs.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, since I have you here and you know, my demographic on social media is definitely 35 and up, but you know, there are some younger women who follow me as well, but everybody's in. So about what's your skincare routine? And, you know, I don't think there's one magic one. Everybody's skin's different, but what, you know, for you as a dermatologist, this is what you do every day. Skin is your thing. What do you recommend?
So at 18, 20, like we talked about, sunscreen every day. Absolutely. Now you want to be doing at least an SPF 15. I mean, that's what is recommended to see that rate of melanoma drop by 50%. But really, as dermatologists, we recommend for daily use at least an SPF of 30. So the reason why is that when we look at something like an SPF 15 that can block 95% of rays, that's if it's applied 2 millimeters thick. So everybody can think of how big 2 millimeters thick is. That's going to be like a white little ghost. And nobody's going to do that. So what they have found is that most people rub in their sunscreen to about 0.5 millimeter thick, but that's dropping that
factor. Yeah. Okay.
So that's why it's really good to do more of like an SPF 30 for every day, or an SPF 50 or above if you're going to be in strong sun. A topic for later, melasma, which is a condition we see in women that's very sun sensitive. For my patients with melasma, I recommend SPF 50 a day or more.
And you said with your patients with melasma, you recommend 50?
Okay. Yes, because it's so sun sensitive, and it will see these dark patches on their face really dark very quickly. And then we want to look at the types of sunscreen. So there's two main types of sunscreen, chemical and then also mineral. So mineral are going to be your zinc or titanium. And really, those are becoming our preferred forms, and for multiple reasons. The zinc and titanium, they just sit on your skin, and then they block the rays. They're not absorbed into the bloodstream. There were some articles that came out, some studies, and it said, and they found that there are some chemical sunscreens that are being absorbed into our bloodstream. We don't know if there's any relevance to that or not, but prefer not to. And then we also want to think about all of our coral reefs. So there's also much evidence out there showing that the chemical sunscreens are destroying our reefs. One more reason that I lean towards mineral sunscreen, because like you said, I love going to Costa Rica. I'm a water baby. And so that's important as well. But then also when we talked about melasma and another condition that we see that can be sun sensitive, like rosacea, we know that some chemical sunscreens, when they are trying to absorb that radiation, they sometimes accidentally release a free oxygen radical into the skin that can create more inflammation.
Okay.
So we're not seeing that with the mineral-based sunscreens. So one of the things that's tricky is mineral-based sunscreens can have a little bit more of a white color to them. And so if you look at more of the micronized products that are more a little more cosmetically elegant, you're going to find that you'll find something that just melts into your skin quite beautifully and not have that white cast. So sunscreen's wonderful. There's so many different types of sunscreen. There's lotions, creams, sticks are wonderful for children. You know,
yeah,
your face so quickly, see where you're going. There's sprays. Sprays are a little tricky because if you're using a mineral spray, you can usually see where you're going. But there's a lot of people who get burned when they're spraying with a chemical sunscreen because they come out clear and they oftentimes don't put it on thick enough and they oftentimes miss areas. do like the mineral sunscreens that are spray. They come out, you can see where it is on your body, rub it in, make sure you're not missing an area. But going back to our lungs, we want to make sure not to use the spray sunscreens on our face. It's not good for our lungs,
yeah.
Our eyes. So definitely sticks are great, lotion screens. And then one of the great things that I love, that this will be one of our giveaways, a fresh clean one, this one's mine, are going to be powder sunscreens. So these are SPF 50. They also, the one that we have from Color Science has iron oxides in them. Iron oxides are great because we know that infrared radiation and blue light radiation, visible light, basically coming from our screens, is also aging us. It's not necessarily leading to skin cancer, but it is causing chronic inflammation and resulting in aging. So that's one of the beautiful things about iron oxides.
Okay.
Not only do we need to protect our face and all these other areas, but also our lips. So using sunscreen, using an eyelid sunscreen, we do see basal cells and cells on the eyelids, and that can cause a lot of disfiguration. So make sure that we're protecting our eyelids too.
Yeah, we just, you just have to think about, you know, the areas that you don't think are going to, you know, I'm actually more cognizant of it now that I have kids, because I start from their head and I work my way down.
Exactly.
What could potentially hit that sun? I never thought about that about myself, but you know, I have kids now, and considering what I had with the melanoma in situ, I'm like, I think about their ears, the back of their ears, their, you know, up above their hair, their chin, in their hairlines. I have curly head. Both of my kids have curly heads and hair. And so I actually get it in their scalp, their hairlines, the back of their neck, any place, you know, their hands, because even though they're wearing rash guards, they do right up. So I always pull up their rash guards a little bit and spray there or put the lotion on there so that I know that in case it does right up, they'll get it. Same thing for when their bottoms, I'll pull their bottoms down, spray there. So that I know that in case their bottoms are coming down, that they're protected. The other thing that I wanted to, you know, I don't know that we mentioned this, but you know, for yourself and for your kids, but if you're in water and you've already applied sunscreen, are you a one and done?
No.
Application? Okay.
So, whenever you come right back out of the water, you know, you should go ahead and reapply your sunscreen immediately right after your towel dry off. Or let's say you've been cycling or doing something very strenuous outside. You've been running for an hour. You're very sweaty. You've probably sweated off some of that sunscreen. So you need to dry off and reapply. So those are great factors.
And then I'll interrupt you for a minute, but I see all the time, and I never thought about this until I had kids. They'll get out of the pool and they'll start rubbing sunscreen in the water, you know, the water that's still on their skin. And that doesn't work. Like you said, you got to give them a chance to dry off, let them have a break. Make the kids take a little break, let them dry off, have a snack, then reapply once their skin is dry. So, you know, if they're still damp and you try to reapply, it's not going to work the same way.
Exactly. And then one of the other things, you know, we're talking a lot about kiddos. I have a lot of moms that I see that they do such a good job taking care of the kids, but then they're tired after that. And after wrangling everybody, they just forget to go ahead and reapply their own sunscreen. So don't forget about yourselves either. So that's always really important too.
Yeah, it has to be a group effort. You know, whenever you have this sunscreen in your hand, you know, obviously as moms, our instinct is to take care of our kids first. That's fine, but just turn it around on yourself. And I'll have my husband spray me down or whatever, you know, if I can't get to certain areas, because, you know, I know that I can't always, and I always forget about the back of my neck. I always wear my hair up when we're out, and I'll put it on here and here. And then I always forget about here. So, or the backs, you know, back of your ears, and that area, a little flat back in there, is also another important area. So, you know, we just have to think about the areas that are exposed, any areas exposed, like you said, the hands. We ride bikes a lot.
Yes.
So we're biking. Now I'm covered from head to toe. I'm the only person in Houston, Texas, that wears pants, the bike, and a long sleeve shirt and covered up. And they look at me like I'm crazy, but then I have my hands out there, and there's been a few times I forgot. I'm like, okay, well, that's kind of defeating the purpose. I got to put it on my hands because here they are right here on my handlebars getting exposed. Okay. So yeah, you just have to think about everything when you're applying the sunscreen. Yeah. Well, this has been a great discussion. You're very informative, but is there anything that we did not touch upon that you think we need to know about?
Well, we did talk a lot about how to protect ourselves from the sun, but there are a couple other things that we can add to our skincare regimen, like you were
okay.
to. So doing some topical antioxidants every day, but vitamin C is going to be one of the most studied one. Also vitamin E, folic acid is another great one. And these are going to be products that you can just apply in the morning. They've got 24-hour protection. These antioxidants, their goal is to bind all that inflammation and calm down inflammation in the skin. But the tricky thing when it comes to vitamin C is not all vitamin C's are created equal. So sometimes you'll your skin cancer product, or your skin cream or your sunscreen, it says has vitamin C. That type is probably not going to be quite as effective. You really need to have vitamin C that's more in a serum form.
So your own separate product that's specifically vitamin C. Yeah,
exactly. And it needs to be kept in a very dark bottle because vitamin C breaks down very easy due to sunlight. And some have different stabilities and shelf life. So you need to have something that's really good, high quality product. But that's wonderful. And then there's also some nice antioxidants and enzyme repair genes products that can be applied at nighttime too, to also try and work on repairing some of the damage that you may have encountered during the day.
Yeah. And, you know, again, if you're in the Houston area and you just want, which I know, I'm sure a lot of women do, they just want to get in front of you and say, listen, look at my skin. And what do you recommend? I need to get a good skin regimen going. You know, this is what dermatologists do. They love this stuff, actually. And they all have their, you know, they're all a little bit different. They're going to have different products they like and all that. But I think the gist of it is pretty much the same. And, you know, I'm sure you could pay top dollar for some amazing products. I see it online. I'm thinking, ooh. But you can also buy products that are at a very reasonable price as well. So that's where a good a visit with your dermatologist. Listen, we think about getting our pap smear. We think about, you know, all the other, get our mammograms and stuff, but our skin is the largest organ in our body and we have to protect that. So, you know, I think for women, just as we mentioned earlier, going to a dermatologist once a year, just to get, as your skin changes, as you age, they can give you recommendations on what to do, what can put a regimen for you that's within your budget, tell you where to look and what products you need. I also hear, and you know, I'm on TikTok now because I'm getting TikTok famous. I'm teasing. But one of the popular things is that they put on their skincare regimen, right? And some of these people are doing like 20 products a night. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think you need 20 products.
Probably don't need 20, but about five.
About five. So I agree. I think you can pretty much get what you need, five products or under. Yeah. So if you don't know where to go and you have five friends telling you five different things and the internet telling you another million different things, go to a dermatologist and they can look at your skin and tell you what they think. They can, I think a dermatologist, correct me if I'm wrong, they consider your skin tone, what, you know, I have red hair and blue eyes, and they have recommendations based on factors that we don't necessarily consider from our friends or on the internet.
Right.
Correct?
Exactly. And then also other things that we're looking at are, what are the specific diagnoses that you may have? Are you acne?
Okay.
Do you have eczema? Do you have rosacea?
Right.
Asthma? And so we want to be able to address those things and also try not to cause any further irritation, because there's a lot of products that do cause irritation in those patients who are susceptible.
So for what, so what you're saying is, like, I may get a skincare regimen that I think is perfect for me because I'm 46 and I'm getting, trying to treat fine lines and wrinkles and my melasma, but I could also have something else going on that I can make worse because I'm choosing the wrong products.
Correct. Exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, my advice to you, not just because I love Dr. Peterson and I'm very thankful to her, but, you know, no matter where you are, there are dermatologists that can help you out and advise you. And if you are in the Houston area, I do recommend Pearl Dermatology because I love them. But, you know, you could look wherever you're at and you just make that appointment with a dermatologist, get some recommendations, start taking care of your skin early so that you don't have to go through the melasma and all the other yucky stuff that I'm having on my face right now. So
yeah,
we'll talk about that when I see you next.
So if you go to the AAD.org, that's American Academy of Dermatology, you can do a physician finder, enter in your zip code.
Actually, let me make a banner. So where'd you say AAD.org?
AAD.org. Uh-huh. The other one that's great is our American Society of Dermatologic Surgery. That's the ASDS.net.
And they say that, what was the last thing you said?
ASDS.net.
And what is that for?
That's going to be the American Society of Dermatologic Surgery. So it's just, there's the AAD, that's the really big one. And then there's the ASDS, it's a little bit smaller. But in the ASDS, you have a lot of the procedural dermatologists that do skin cancer surgery, who do laser surgery for a variety of conditions. And there's physician finders in both of those places.
Yeah, I'm gonna put that, pop that up there. There you go. So you can go to AAD.org to find a physician in your area. And then, and if you're needing some kind of procedure done, you can go to ASDS.net to kind of find someone in your area that, that might be able to do that.
Perfect.
Okay. Well, I thank you for your day, for your time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you.
And we'll chat soon. I'll see you soon.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed that discussion. Now listen to the next episode on Healing Couples, Parenting Through the Chaos.